Good afternoon, good evening, good metal. My name's Coop and welcome to the Spoken Metal Show. This episode's an interview with Jake 001 from Dire Thorns. And why do interviews with new bands and bands that with maybe not an awful lot of music out there? Why do that? Highlight that there is great new music out there. There are bands up and coming, producing great beginning of their journey. There is a that we're looking at the bands that will become bands that are headliners and whatever, and we'll move on to their story at the beginning of their journey. And it points to the scene and how healthy it is. If there are new bands emerging and new artists emerging, then that scene is healthy. That's how this whole thing works. So it's really enjoyable to talk to young and up-and-coming bands about their mindsets, how they're releasing their music, what they want to do, what they want to achieve. And it's changed over the last sort of 5 to 10 years about what bands and artists actually want from doing, and what their influences are, and how they're influenced, and then how they release their music, and how they speak to their audience. And Jake's a really interesting example that I agree with, things you may agree with, but it's giving you a sort of a litmus test, if you will, of what's out there and what of artists are and what their thinking is behind releasing music and the scene itself. And it might be different from what you think it is. It might be different from what you thought was going on. And it's always great to have different opinions and different ways of looking at things and how people see and perceive the scene. So it's great to talk to new bands and listen to new music. There is so much fucking great stuff out there, ladies and gentlemen. There are so many interesting sorts of permutations on what we consider metal. It's really great to talk to new artists. It's not like I'm going to not talk to maybe more established artists in inverted commas, or famous people in inverted commas, if you will. It's not like we're not going to do that. There's some shows coming up where I talk to people, various people with inside the business. But it's always great to see what's coming through. I'm one of those people that loves introducing bands to people and saying, have you fucking heard this? Listen to this band, listen to that band. I love doing that. It's a really big part of who I am, how and why I enjoy metal music. There's nothing better, isn't there, ladies and gentlemen, when you play a song to or send a song to one of your friends and they're blown away and it suddenly becomes their favourite band. That's how this is meant to work. You know, this is how word of mouth and bands can get across and cut through, you know, the bullshit of the algorithm and all that type of thing and make it through to your ears. So it's great to talk to new bands. If you are a new band and you want to appear on the show, then, you know, feel free to DM me and contact me through the social medias, and I hope you do. And it's always great. I have a voracious appetite, as I've said before, for listening to new music. That said, there's some great shows coming up, which I'm going to do a couple of preview shows. We have Metal to the Masses coming up soon. I'm going to do a preview show for that. Really looking forward to those shows. Really looking forward to it. It's a great time of year for metal. But now, please enjoy my conversation with Jake 001 from Dire Thorns. Ladies and gentlemen, it's always a real nice pleasure to talk to new and upcoming bands and bands at the beginning of their journey and still at that early stage producing some great stuff. So it's really nice to sit down with Dire Thorns, Jake 001 from Dire Thorns. How are you doing, sir?
Hallo, ich bin Hans.
How are you doing? So, I mean, there's a lot to cover. There's a lot to cover. Even in the history side of Dire Thorns, there's a lot to cover. But I certainly want to talk about the new single, which I've been listening to. A lot of people that might be the first time that they hear you. But as always, I really just want to go back to the very start for you. And I want to go sort of back to the start, the first music you're hearing, even if it isn't metal, and then kind of where metal comes in. So what's the first kind of music you're hearing?
Ah, wait, so do you mean like the first kind of music I got into?
No, I mean, even before that, the first music you're hearing, even if it's non-metal, you know, what's the first kind of music that you're hearing, even? Yeah, if you want, yeah, let's go with that.
I mean, I can't even remember my life before the age of 6, so that's going to be difficult. I don't know. My mum and my bio dad, they were in bands a lot. My mum was gigging whilst pregnant, so technically I heard my mum's old punk band before I was born.
So, your mum and dad were in a punk band, was it? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's cool. What were they called? Do you remember?
Squad 69.
Squad 69. That's a fantastic punk band name. So, yeah, the music you would have first heard would have been In Utero, and it would have been punk music, which is superb.
Exactly, my friend.
And is that what they played kind of around the house as well? Because they were in a band, they listened to a whole lot of punk as well.
It's a mix of things. It's, you know, my bio dad was very snooty about the pop music and all that, like a lot of heavier listeners are. I don't know. It was a bunch of different things. I didn't get into music until later on, as most people tend to do.
So what was the first things that you got into when you kind of young adults, if you will, then? What was the first thing you were listening? Okay. Did it start with metal?
So, well, not exactly, but it comes in very, very quickly. So when I was nine, I started, so this all starts kind of weirdly because there was this new kids channel that was on Freeview called Pop, and I absolutely refused to watch it because for some reason I was utterly convinced that it would just be a channel of pop music. And this was before I was even into music. So I don't know why this was a concern to me so much, but I just turned on the channel and saw it was all right. And there was this one show called Grosh Band that was on. It sucked. It's awful. But I loved it when I saw it. And, you know, it's a thing about people in a band. And I watched that show and was just like, all right, that's what I want to do. I want to get a guitar. And about a month before my 10th birthday, we went into a bloody music shop on Freeman Street. And got my first guitar with first practice amp for about 45 quid, I think. Yeah, around about that. And that's how I started the instrument. And it wasn't shortly after that. Now, it's my memory of this next bit in terms of timeline is a bit spotty, but for like 6 years of my life up until about now, Monster by Skillet was my favorite song on the planet. Are you aware of that song?
Yes.
Yeah. That song was like my favorite thing for about 6 years of my life. And it was, I have two separate memories of discovering metal. Two completely separate, and I don't know which happened first. So one of them, I was on a camping trip with some family and friends of family, and there was this kid called Brandon who I looked up to as the coolest guy ever. Like, this was the proper Chad from high school kind of guy. And I remember I was walking out my house and I stated the exact phrase, "Monster by Skillet is the single heaviest song ever written." I said that was the exact phrasing. And my phone's deciding to not charge. Come on, you bastard. There we go. Okay. Where was I? Yes. Yeah, I said that. And then they were like, let me show you this, young man. They were like my Gandalf or something. And they showed me Spit It Out by Slipknot. And I was like, this is great. And that's one of my memories. My other memory of discovering metal is I was sitting in the living room with my mom. They were going through like their old PC with all the old records they had on there and stuff. And they were going through things trying to look for stuff that I liked, because I mean, all I really liked at the time was that one song, the made-up band from the cartoon show, and I don't know, Nirvana, I guess. And they came across Iowa, the album, and put on People Equals Shit, and I was just like, oh, this exists. Okay, yeah, this is my thing now. And for the next 2 years, I listened to nothing but Slipknot. Like, I wouldn't even go into other bands. It took me a while. The next bands that I'd get into were, like, deathcore shit, like, Suicide Silence. They were pretty cool. I know Impending Doom were a surprisingly early one, because I don't consider them that notable in my past, but they were quite early. The next band that I actually properly got into was Korn, but it's only because while I was, a Slipknot elitist, as I'd say, Korn would always be recommended to me as like, Slipknot and Korn, that's the bundle packet. But the issue with that is Slipknot and Korn sound nothing alike. They are complete. This is the thing that I've discovered about nu metal. All the biggest bands in the genre sound nothing alike, and all the smaller bands sound exactly the same. It's a strange genre. But yeah, I'd be recommended all this stuff. I'd go listen to them, and I'd be like, "Dinner, where's the roar? He's not doing it. I'm clicking off." Like, I'd click off of any song if it, didn't have extreme vocals in, like, the first 30 seconds. I was that kind of guy.
Yeah.
And once I got into them, I actually got into bass, because I was like, wait, the bass does things? Because you can hear it in Korn songs. I guess that's not exactly a place to stop a story, but it's somewhere to lay it to rest.
But it makes sense. There's a ton of stuff to unpack there. But the biggest thing being, I 100% agree that, when we say new metal, the stalwarts and the Mount Rushmore of that, those bands sound nothing like each other. And if they came out now, we would put them in different categories. Slipknot wouldn't come in a new metal category. Korn would not be in that category. And it's weird, isn't it? It's one of those, every other sort of genre in metal has its category, the way you can tell where things belong. But new metal's wide open.
That's the weird thing about nu metal. That's just kind of where they put anything from the 90s that they can't put in a specific...
Yeah, it's like an island of misfit toys, isn't it? It's like, okay, we don't know quite what this is because they've mixed rap and metal, or they've got a DJ in the band or whatever it may be. Fuck it, let's just put it in the nu metal world, because that'll cover everything, And I understand why, but it's a massive disservice, because then people will say, oh, I'm not really into nu metal. Which part, which element are you not into, and that's the amazing thing about it. And what's good though is that now we're at a stage in history where the people are going back to that era and rediscovering bands and really kind of going with it. Like, so, Limp Bizkit had a massive resurgence. Korn seemingly to be on a constant resurgence, constantly reinventing themselves. And Slipknot, just went from strength to strength. Were you like consuming music at the same time as this? Were you going out and buying stuff, or were you streaming it? How were you listening to this stuff?
Well, throughout all of my life, the way that I always listen to music is YouTube. Not YouTube music, I just look it up on YouTube, which would mean that I watch a lot of live videos and music
streams
videos
and such, yeah.
I fucking love music videos, as you can probably tell, since Diathlon.
Yeah, that's something, ladies and gentlemen, I'll put links up to the band's bits and pieces, but there's an awful lot for a young early sort of band. There's an awful lot of video presentation on there. It seems to be like you really do help that in Harry God, which leads me to a question or what I did want to raise is, some would say that the video per se is kind of dead now. I don't agree. I think there's probably, when it's done well, it could be groundbreaking. But I, to some, the video is kind of dead because everybody streams their stuff now, and you know, the visually, I think it's maybe that's not the case. I think it's when it's done well, it can be like, for example, I didn't watch there's a lot of videos I kind of blew past me, and then after Death, Polyphia's song came, and the video for that blew me away because it was so well presented. I mean, you must think that there is legs in videos, that they are incredibly important.
Yeah, well, the thing is about videos. Now, I may as well mention, I watch a lot of Damien Keyes. I am absolute, you know, I'm desperate for that kind of, oh, success kind of bollocks. one thing that he pushes quite a lot is the music video as a format. It isn't the central focus anymore, but it's very, very important. Like, for with the modern age, I fucking adore the modern age of music. Like, you know, back in the day, people are like, oh, well, it's all based on luck, isn't it? People still say it now. It's just, no, it's like, you've got to develop a lot more. All right, I'm going off topic.
Not at all. I completely agree. I completely agree. Yeah. Keep growing, lean into that, like, fully, yeah.
Yeah, it's far more based on work now because you have to master a lot of different mediums to run a modern band, but the way that you go about that is almost direct to your success, which is pretty cool. But yeah, the music video is...
Because I'll tell you now, it's not dead. Let me frame this this way. I'll tell you how it's not dead and it's still massively important. Mm. Because if I said to you, for example, or all the metal community, the Tool are releasing a new song at 12 o'clock tonight, midnight, and they're going to put a video with it, you would watch that video. Because yeah. Tool make really fucking cool videos. Yeah, yeah. That's the thing. I think you raise an absolutely very interesting point about how you perceive modern music in inverted commas and the kind of how that's worked. Is I agree that there's a lot of people are like, there's too much going on. There's too much. You have to have your fingers in too many pies. But in many ways, that's a positive, right? That's a good thing that there's a load of different ways that you can put your music out there.
Yeah, I need to digress on this since the music video in this modern age, of course, you got to do a lot of things, but it's related to hard work. However, thanks to things like the internet and the advancement of times, anyone can make a music video. For some reason, bands still pay hundreds of pounds to make music videos. Oh, but the quality is better. Yeah, but you could just learn it yourself. Oh, well, I don't know. I guess that's, but what was I going on anyway? All right, so.
No, I hear what you're saying that, like, yeah, it costs a lot of money to make a music video. It does and it doesn't. So, like, there's someone like, I don't know if you've heard of the rapper Ren. And he does his own videos, and he very much directs them and very much puts them together. And one of the videos that's got the most amount of attention is him doing a cover of Bittersweet Symphony and his own kind of rap and bits and pieces with it. That's clearly done on a fairly reasonable camera or even phone with very low production values. And it's fabulous because, yes, it's nice to have good lighting and good cameras and all the type of things, but ultimately the idea is strong. The idea is kind of, you know, is all. If you've got a really strong and great idea, it comes across. You know, when John Carpenter, you know, started with Halloween, it was made up for fuck all, you know, but it was groundbreaking because of the ideas that he put in place, and like you say, just putting in hard work of making something good by blood, sweat and tears going into it, and ideas and creativity. And in some ways, when people get more money and more options, the product becomes worse, which is interesting. You know, so I hear what you're saying totally. I suppose the taboo, Jake, is that no one wants to say it, but realistically, it just requires you to do work. It just requires you to put the effort in. Learn how to use an iPhone as a camera. Learn how to work things. Learn how to do lights. Learn how to edit. Learn how to do it. This stuff is all fucking free. It's all free. Yeah. Learn how to do it and crack on with it, you know?
You are a very interesting man, and I agree with your points. Well, I rapped, okay?
So So you kind of take it in Slipknot, you take it in Korn and that type of thing. When do we move to you going to seeing bands live? Now, surely with a mum and dad in the punk circuit, you would have been to see shows at a fairly early age, I'm thinking.
First, I'm going to wrap off the music video thing.
Oh, okay. So
my initial point was music video isn't the main attraction anymore, but it's something that further promotes the song as an idea and therefore you, the artist, as an idea. And what you people can do nowadays, because you can make music videos for free, because anyone can do it just for the sake of it, you can make multiple music videos. You can make multiple mediums for which this is continued. A great phrase that Damien Keyes came out with that I really agree with: a song never dies, it just stops being promoted. But yes, on to the second thing about the live shows.
Yeah, live shows. When's the first kind of time you go to live shows then?
Well, that actually wasn't much of a thing, because like by the time that like I was born or my younger sibling was born, like all that band stuff was kind of coming to a close. Especially by the time my younger sibling was born, and I would have been three by about then. The whole live show thing. Now, of course, I mentioned, you know, me getting into guitar when I was nine. From about that point, I was trying to start a band, and it wasn't until like, It wasn't for a few months that I got a member. Then it wasn't until I was in like year five at this point, year four, year five. And it wasn't until like year eight that I started getting members. And, you know, that was more just like people came to practice and then people didn't come to practice. I was a weird person. I still am, but I just kind of consider people part of the band even though they hadn't said yes or no and had never turned up to a practice once. I was just like, you play guitar, awesome, you're in my band. I don't think I knew how people worked yet.
At that age, Jake, no one does, you know. And your history that you put up on the website, the kind of the phased history.
I was 13. Of the band
was fascinating to me because it was completely and brutally honest. I was almost taken aback. I suggest you read it as well, because it was brutally honest. This didn't work out. We got rid of this person. This person left. This person didn't want to be here. And I was like, that is incredibly refreshing, because it was pretty like, This is the history of the band. This is what happened. And you'd include people, like you say, that you wanted to join but didn't even show up to jam. I was blown away by that. I thought it was incredibly honest and incredibly brutal.
I didn't know anyone read that. You know, the strange thing.
I fucking did, yeah.
I've nearly deleted that whole section before. I'm going to update it after today. I'm going to update
it. Honestly, mate, that's it was refreshing, because it was honest to a fault. You know, it was something that I was like, that's an incredibly, most bands hide the fact that someone's been in it for 10 minutes or whatever, or just fallen out and stuff, and they tend to hide that. I find it very refreshing that you were brutally honest. Do you know what I mean? Do you think that you're still just. I mean, we get to like where we are now in 2023. But at that time, when you were recruiting people, did you have any idea of what you wanted, or were you just like going, "Okay, I think this may work," and you were just kind of feeling your way through the process of forming a band?
No, I completely full on through and through knew what I wanted. I was always writing music for this hypothetical band. Yeah. All the way through, like I had a very concrete idea on what this was, what the branding was, what everything was. I've been thinking about it since I was 10. I'm 18 now. I've been thinking about this shit for literally half my life now.
Wow.
I just want to close off the point that we started on about the live shows. I didn't really see much live shows of bands. I I really wanted to play. I mean, I was playing gigs myself since the age of 10, since I found this awesome thing called Rock School. It's called Total Music now.
Yeah, I don't know.
And there was a version of it in Immingham where I live. There's also one in Scunthorpe somewhere nearby, but yeah, I went to the Immingham one. And yeah, it was pretty much a program that was like, kids in the local area who play music, you can all get together. We all like submit songs for a gig set list. We all learn each other's songs and play on each other's songs and play on our own songs. And then at the end of like the term, we do a gig at Blossom Way, which was awesome because like I was doing this for what, 3-4 years. And this was while I was, you know, this was while I was in the stages of trying to make up Dire Thorns as a band. But yeah, it was only then that I went to live shows because I was playing them. The one time that I've seen a big band play live was Slipknot with Behemoth opening at Sheffield O2 Arena January 20th, 2020, right before the pandemic. That was the one time that I saw a big band.
Wow.
But yeah.
That must have just, fucking hell, that must have took your head off then. If that's the first kind of band you see, and it's a band you've listened to for like you several years before, and it's them at arguably the height of the powers. And you know, with that stage show that we can all remember, that must have been absolutely mind-blowing.
It was a fuck of a mental experience, like just thinking that they're in like the same building as me was just weird. It still feels weird that I was that close to any of it. I don't listen to many bands. Hell, nowadays, I rarely even listen to music. I make my own music all the time, but in terms of listening to music, barely fucking do it. And if I do, it's one of like 5 bands maybe. And you know, Slipknot was that original, and it's just, you know, they're very much the untouchable gods kind of area for me.
Yeah, that's interesting. You don't like listen to an awful lot of music. Is that because the idea of what you've got, the idea of what you want to sound like, and the idea of what you want the band to sound like is so formed that it's almost like it's a need to get it out? It's like, listen, if I listen to other stuff, it's going to get in the way of me producing what I want to do. You know, and some would argue that that's a bad thing, and some would argue it's a good thing. It's a bad thing that you're maybe not getting external influences that can help spark and generate ideas. But if you already have a fully formed idea, then it's maybe a good thing because you are producing something completely original, because it's having almost virtually not many influences at all.
To me, music is like any other medium of entertainment. I find it very difficult to sit and just consume entertainment, to just consume media. And with music, I don't know, it's like, because I'm not into many bands, I download, because like the only times where I'd have a moment where I feel like listening to music is when I'm, you know, on a bus or something, and my mobile data is not reliable and I don't like using it. Sure. So I tend to download songs. But the issue is, if you have downloaded songs, you listen to those downloaded songs and you're kind of bored of them. And it just kind of made me kind of bored of listening to music as a medium. But yeah, you talked about it getting in the way of things. A lot of people perceive a lot of things to be in the way. I'm trying to figure out where to start on this point in my head, because let's say, I don't know, back in like in any sort of show or movie, whenever characters want to create a band, they're like, let's drop out of college to focus fully on the band. And I'm always sat there like, you can have a school life and a work life and a band. You can have so much and a band. You can have so much and more. It's, I don't know, it's like, for example, with me, Now, I have a few things. I've got a college life. I've recently started a work life. I've, of course, got the band, which is like my main mental focus. I've got my multilingual starting and maintaining. Like, I'm trying to maintain a good level in Russian while I begin to try and embark on a different language. It was originally Arabic, now it's German. I kind of switched from place to place and then realized that I just, and then eventually just realized that I don't care and just double down on Russian or something.
Why Russian?
I wrote a book once, and okay. I don't read books. I can't stand reading books, and this is so bad to the point where I've written a whole ass book, and I can't bring myself to read it because I can't stand reading.
That's an extraordinary situation to be in.
It's so hilarious.
What, do you not want to get it published? What's it about?
Well, it's recently a show's came out called Our Flag Means Death.
Yeah, I saw that.
It's very similar. Like, it's strikingly similar. Okay. Like, a middle-aged guy has a midlife crisis and just runs out to sea to be a pirate.
Okay.
Like, there's a lot of other things, but I was describing it to my older sibling, and they were just like, that sounds a lot like Our Flag Means Death. So pretty much, it's like a novelization of that, but less gay, more nonsensical, and with quite a bit of cannibalism as well. That turns out, I don't know.
So where does the Russian, why the Russian thing there? Why learn Russian? Where's that come from?
Well, it's interesting that everything's interesting. Why am I so great? Okay. So this whole Russian thing starts, I guess we can technically start year 10. I'm sitting in science and this person next to me just said, it's a lovely day today, out of nowhere, just as a facetious statement or something. And I translated it incorrectly into French in my head, and I realized, wait, I get how French works now, because I was always in top set for French. I always got decent marks in it, but I didn't know how it worked. I was just coasting along trying to make my way. But it's like other languages, just language as a thing and how it worked just clicked in my head. And then I got really like into the lesson. And then didn't, like, I never got to any decent level at it. I just kind of learned the odd phrase here and there. Practically, I became a twat because, you know, if you say a random French phrase every now and then, you're a twat. But yeah, that's kind of obsolete.
Because Russian is a beautiful language. It's beautiful to look at. As well as speak, it's beautiful. It's like most languages, it's got its own cadence and everything. It's quite beautiful. So I understand. I totally understand why you would lean towards that. I totally get that.
I mean, I have my phone in Russian. I have everything in Russian. Because whenever I look at English, it feels too easy and too boring. YouTube in Russian is vomit inducing. All the words are too long, so it's just dot.
It's crazy for sure, yeah.
So the entire reason I started learning Russian was because I was, you know, dating someone for the first time. I was 16 and this was on Yubo and we never met in person. I haven't had a proper in-person relationship. I was dating this person and they were like learning Russian for a bit. And I was like, oh, I'm going to download Duolingo and we can like have this thing we do together, because I was desperate for things to do together with this person, because they were the kind of person to just kind of out of nowhere delete all their socials and go quiet for a week and then come back. And pretty much they'd avoid any kind of doing anything, which is why even though they were only the next town over, we never met. until 3 months after we broke up when we went to the same college. That's a whole other can of worms. But a week after I started learning Russian, they quit because they'd avoid anything to do with me, despite being with me. Somehow I was just already obsessed with this language and just kind of went on with it. And it was kind of a blessing in disguise, because when that quite scarring relationship ended up finishing, I didn't relate the language to them at all. If anything, I doubled down on it.
It all makes sense. I mean, I want to talk about the sort of the first sort of singles that came out, and like things like Cut and that type of thing. How close were they to what you wanted them to be? Because you've got the reason I ask this is because you've got a very strong vision of what you wanted the band to sound like.
Yeah.
So you must have been pretty doubling down on the first couple of songs to get that sound right. How close were you to the first couple of singles?
Well, I'm probably going to be looking for my water bottle while I do this, because I don't know where. And I do not... Oh, thank fuck, there it is. Yeah, I get the panic if my water bottle isn't near. Some kind of paranoia about it, I don't know. It makes a noise. It keeps me safe.
There you go.
But yeah. What were you asked? Oh, yeah, Cut and all that. So, yeah. The deal is, with all those... Now, Cut was the first song that I wrote that wasn't based on a guitar riff, which is strange, because its guitar riff is like the driving force and it's like the catchiest thing ever. But I had my first idea for it while I was walking to school, and it was the drum riff. You know, that kind of thing. As you hear throughout the whole last song, it's the same drum bit, but on different cymbals pretty much. But yeah. That was just kind of the first fleshed out song. Like, I wrote loads of songs before it, but that was the first fleshed out song I made that I was proud of. And its lyrics are just, you know, any random shit that came to mind. Like, it's very much a lot of that earlier stuff that you see. It wasn't like a sound that I was looking for. It was just whatever sound I could possibly think of.
Ah, okay.
Now the thing is, I've written Cut in 2016. That's something to keep in mind. Came out in 2020. This applies to, out of the songs we have released, Cut, Fear, and Morbidity. However, with Morbidity, it's kind of weird because it was actually written about a thing rather than just whatever I could think. But it was like the start of, it was when I was like, I'd been listening to Korn for about a year and I'd started to get the concept of writing about a thing. So it's, I mean, I like it. I like the lyrics a lot less than the ones about nothing, just because I'm trying to write about something, but I'm not good at it yet. Meanwhile, Shut Up also goes in that category. However, you listen to Call Me Nothing or The Replacement, those were written in 2020 rather than these ones that were... All the others were written in 2016 and 2017. Then those two, 2020. And Naša Strana was written just last year.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of content that I haven't used yet that was written over those years.
There's an interesting thing that comes up here. It's a question I guess seems fairly natural to ask, is that, you know, you say you have a very fully formed idea of what the band is as a thing, but then the first songs, you're saying that you're just trying to make music and just trying to put any old, quote-unquote, any old lyrics on there.
Yeah,
that's interesting to me. So like, the first couple of songs then, are they just sketches? Are they just kind of like, let's figure out how to make a song from beginning to end? Is it a case of then we have yet to hear what in the sound in your head? and the idea in your head. We've yet to probably hear a fully realised version of that.
It's a strange thing. How I think of it is, people always say, oh, it should be about the music. Oh, the music's the most important bit. But throughout my entire time, I've always thought about it the opposite way. My thought on the image and the message and all of that discreet shit about the band has been concrete from the start. Like, from the start, we have been a masked metal band that would be a fucking energetic monster on stage. I didn't even think about the music when I was thinking about this.
Does that put a bit of a target on you? I hear what you're saying, but you're saying that, you know, the visuals, the stage show, the energy is the paramount force behind what you're doing. I understand that. I understand it completely, certainly from the influences that you have. But some would say, if you're not singing something meaningful or not, not accessing someone from a lyrical point of view, that weakens, the real success should be the both of them together. You should have the visuals, but also the lyrical content should be there. Is that not maybe, will some people say, okay, your band, it just looks great? You know, is it maybe putting a target on yourself like that?
The funny thing is, I love making music that I pour my heart and soul into, but the funny thing is about how I've seen the music industry is that's complete bollocks. Like, the crowd doesn't give a shit what you're singing about. When you have my vocal style, they don't even know. Wow. If your music is mediocre at best and you have a sick stage show, you will be the one that they remember. The guys before you could have played the fucking best song you've ever heard, but if they didn't have as much of an impactful show as you, they won't be as... It's all about being memorable. And, I mean, well, the thing is, the music and the meaning behind it is an important part. Like, that is something that needs to be considered. But in terms of hierarchy, it's not that high up.
So when you played Metal to the Masters Sheffield, was it? Yeah,
twice.
So you got to do that with several other bands within that genre, and you were pretty blunt in your estimations of that and how you felt that went. And about your assessment yourself, I've had a very refreshing that you pointed out all the things that you certainly can improve on. So when you played that, how many shows had you actually played when you came to play the Metal to the Masses? How many shows have you done? How many sets have you done?
Which one was this?
Was that Metal to the Masses Sheffield, was it?
Yeah, but I've done it twice.
Oh, right, sorry. Let's go with the first time. How many shows have you played up to that?
The first time was 2021, and the second time was 2022. You did mention, so in the more, I want to mention, for the more recent one, four bands were competing, including us. We're the only one that haven't got through to the next round. Two of them got through, one of them was wild card. We're the only one that didn't get through, which is hilarious to think. But yeah, the first time around, it was in the era of the band where we actually started, like... Of course, we had like two live shows before the pandemic, and then the pandemic happened, and our third gig was like a year and a half after our second, and that was with me and the old drummer from back in those times at a local venue. And then after that, that drummer blanked me, just stopped replying to me. And then I went to my first college and found Erin, who was my bassist for a while. They were the first bandmate that I ever had who were reliable, and they stuck with me, and their parents were coming in to help, and they were just a fucking gem to have in the band. And the thing is, they came in at the perfect time, and they also left at the perfect time. But pretty much, we played two shows together, two local things, and that was when... So we played two local shows, just me on guitar and vocals and a bassist with like a drum backing track. And we played two local shows and then immediately went to Sheffield Metal to the Masses. And we didn't get through that, but I completely understand why. Like, we didn't have a drummer. Our thing malfunctioned on the final song and we had to cut a song off. You know, there was a lot of things to iron through. And the band that got through, Dead Demons, I'm still mates with them. They're fucking great. I love them. But yeah.
What did you do? So you didn't get through that first time, and that happens. That happens. That's a natural. Some would say that's a natural part of the Metal to the Masses. It's important to not get through sometimes, so you can kind of reassess and reapproach. When you came to do it the second time, what did you change?
Well, let me think. So I just want to state the first Metal to the Masses was Direthorn's sixth gig in total. Fourth gig since the pandemic, which is, you know, pretty much the start, and third gig of that actual lineup that we were playing. So it was quite early on now, I think of it, which is weird because it feels a lot more recent than it is in the band's history, just because there's so much of nothing live gigging wise. But yeah, the second time around, we had a drummer. Not only a drummer, but a fucking great drummer. I love Joe. We had a new bassist who was far more movement orientated. Like, they can keep up energy along with me. Erin found difficulty in that because they have like a lot of back problems and stuff. So it's like they're more of a standstill kind of bassist. Bassist, drummer, and we also had a refined set. We had newer material. We had a bunch of newer material, new members. We were fucking refined. We played our fucking hearts out. That's actually like our most recent Metal to the Masses is my most proud show we've done, but we didn't get through. And the bands we lost to, they were great, but one of them were playing their first show in 8 years. The other one didn't have a vocalist.
So are you going to play the next Metal to the Masses?
Yes. I don't know if it's going to be Sheffield, though, because it doesn't seem to luck out too well, but I don't know. Yeah. I'm still contemplating all that stuff, because it's like the only way that I know how we can improve for the next one is just, like, I've started training up a second guitarist, and our bassist is nearly able to drive. So, yeah, we should be able to add another guitarist in, which should help with things.
Does it make it difficult when you have a singular vision and something that you want to do, and it is very much your project and your band and your idea? Is that difficult to engage with other band members then? So if I was the bassist, for example, in the band, and I came to you with an idea, does that get heard, you know, or is it very much your band and the other people are players within that?
The funny thing is about this, I never originally wanted it to just be my band, my choices. But the thing is, because there were so many member changes over such a long period of time, and there was such insecurity in who would be fucking bothered to do whatever, I've set it up in a way that if everyone leaves tomorrow, I can still do the gig that I've got the next day. But the thing is, the members that I have, they, like, sometimes they say things that make me, that make it seem like they believe that it's that way. It's like they respect it. This is my band and my choice. But it's like, I fucking adore having other people to collaborate with. In fact, Nasha Strana is the first song that me and my drummer Joe wrote together. Yeah. And that's like a staple. That's like, it's the first time that I've properly got to construct a whole ass song with another band member, because I never really had that opportunity beforehand. I've had like bandmates do bits and pieces, but yeah.
It sounds like Nasha Strana sounds like, for me, you know, certainly in its conception, seems to be a nice starting point for you, that you've kind of got a little bit more structure in what the band is, and therefore you can kind of write more concisely to what you're kind of shooting for. It feels like it's just a starting point then. I mean, I suppose the natural question would be, with all these singles and now approaching some form of stability that you have, the is what would an album look like? How far away are we from an album?
I've actually got quite a long-term plan for this. Okay. So in a few days, I will be announcing an EP.
Okay.
Because, yeah, this is the start of the EP plan to release Nasha Strana as a Kickstart single.
Okay.
And there'll be two more singles from that. I've got all the music videos done. We've got a stop-motion music video and a performance music video, which we did in the field next to my house, which I wanted a really pretty look for. We ended up getting a stormy look, which still goes great with the song. But, yeah, I was originally going for, like, a lot of, like, dusk sun glare kind of things, but yeah, so EP out this year, and I'm planning to do a full-on album next year. Right. Like, I've got this planned out in my head.
Sure.
I've got an exact date for the EP. The album's still more of a concept.
Okay. But yeah,
that's definitely, I mean, in fact, we released an album in April 20th, 2021.
Okay.
However, I unreleased it because it was just bad
time.
Can you
unrelease stuff? Is that possible? Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Pretty much what happened is, you know, I uploaded Cut, and then once I uploaded Fear, I had a set release date for an album. I uploaded Call Me Nothing as the final single for that. And then the album released on April 20th. And, you know, I was thinking about it for a while and having conversations with people. And I put up something on the Instagram story just being like, I kind of want to unrelease the album and, like, release the songs as singles so that it gets more traction. And surprisingly, everyone voted for yes, which I was really happy about, because I took down the album. I wasn't really that proud of it. And I started to release songs as individual singles. That's, you know, Shut Up was the first single off the album that was voted for. Then it was The Replacement. And then, I don't know, Morbidity was just kind of what I felt like would work best. So yeah, we did have an album, but I unreleased it. I just kind of undid that part of history, because it's just like, I don't know, it was just, I wasn't proud of it at all. It was, I mean, we recorded it throughout 2020, throughout the pandemic. It's very much, you know, it included a lot of older songs that meant nothing, like Cut, Fear, and all that. But yeah.
Just, it's like, it's fascinating to me that, you know, that you seem to be constantly reassessing what you're doing, constantly trying to improve it, and constantly putting the work in. You know, like you say, if you release a single as opposed to an album, each single you can do lyric videos for, live videos for, whatever. You can really dial down on
one of
the songs. So it makes sense. It's a very modern way of approaching it. And so I think that's something that's going to yield all kinds of ones. And an EP will just be essentially collecting some of those ideas together for someone. Yeah, that makes sense to me. It does make sense. I mean, As we're kind of wrapping things up now, I normally ask kind of like what the next shows are, but I think we've kind of been through that. Actually, normally ask what the next albums are, but I think we've been through that as well. But I think that it's refreshing to hear someone with a very, very sort of blunt honesty about what they want to do and how they want to get there. That's not necessarily a bad thing at all. Ladies and gentlemen, I think we're definitely going to get Jake back on the show
in
the near future, just to listen to how this goes, you know.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I'd like to be back.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's been really nice to sit down with Jake, 001 from Dying Thorns. Thanks for coming on the show, man.
Yeah, you're very welcome, my liege.
Jake there from Dire Thorns. So is that something you got something from? Is that something that you want to see more of? Do I need to talk to more up-and-coming bands and bands that are starting out on their journey, as I say? Or not? Or did you not like that? Is that something you're not interested in? That's okay too. I like to think that whenever we do an episode that you really almost don't know what you're going to get, it's just going to be something in the metal sphere. So it could be something that you've never heard of, something you really have heard of, and everything in between. I'll be doing some more preview shows. I'll be doing some more interviews. And I really, really, really want to do those listening episodes again where I do and go through a particular album. So if there's anything like that you want to suggest, feel free to do so. One of the things that happens a lot on the show is I get asked to play new music and review music. And I don't really do that. As I've said before, don't really do that because there's a lot of fine publications and a lot of fine people out there that do that job much better than I do. Plus, I only want to talk about things that I really love. I don't think there's any room for me to talk about stuff that I don't like. You know, I just don't talk about listen to it. So if you are sending me bits and pieces as to kind of happens, that's okay. Sometimes I will feature it on the various social medias as a now playing type of thing. But for the most part, I'd rather just get you on the show and talk about the songs and talk about the albums and that type of thing. Got some really nice shows coming up that I'm really looking forward to. And I'm almost kind of in that enviable position of building up a little bit of a stockpile because I've got some other stuff that I want to really kind of put out there as well. So as always, though, this is your show. This is, if you're listening to this now, I'm deeply appreciative that you're doing that. It's great to know that this show is getting listened to on tour buses and behind the scenes. And as people are going to shows, people are telling me that they listen to the show to get hyped for a show, which is a beautiful thing, which is great. So I'm really happy that's what happens. But if this is your show, if there's things you want me to talk about, if there's bits and pieces you want me to do and albums and artists you want me to cover, get in touch. We'll have a conversation. I'll make it happen. But until then, thanks for listening and I'll see you at the show.